basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And we did get a bit of Lakers news yesterday. They formally announced the Jaden Hardy for DeAndre Ayton trade. They announced the signings of Quentin Grimes and Mamo Kilishvili. And newest bit of news that we got, D, was Lakers signed possibly their backup center. We'll see if it's their third string or backup guy you're familiar with. Somehow still only 30 years old, Kevon Looney, after spending 1 year in New Orleans, only played 21 games there. After several years with the Warriors, winning a few championships. D, what are your thoughts of that signing?
My first thought is our great producer, Jeannie, sent us a text message. I didn't realize that Kevon Looney is only 30. And I shot back it's because he runs like he's much older than he's 30. And I love Kevon Looney. I told my wife yesterday, like, hey, we got your boy. And she was like, what do you mean? I was just like, oh, the Lakers signed Looney to be their backup. And she was like, oh, Looney. I love Looney. But she also said, oh, can he still do it? Even she was skeptical. And I'm like, I don't know. We're about to see. And I'm both high on the idea of having a player like Looney on the team. One of the things I've been looking for in general is a veteran player who's been around the block a fair amount and who has experience, is good in the locker room, and is just a no-frills sort of guy who can help out in a lot of ways that you want a veteran to be able to do. Looney's exactly that. And I think that from a skill set perspective, his offensive rebounding is still really good. I think his screen setting and passing are still at a level where if those are the things he has to do during a game, I think that he can be helpful. My response to you when I saw the signing was, I don't know if he has his legs still. And that's probably the part where I'm like, can he move at the requisite level to be a regular rotation player? And I don't know the answer to that. New Orleans was such a weird team last year, and I actually didn't think he was a very good fit for their roster in general with how they wanted to play and who their better players were, that it makes sense to me, actually, that even if he wasn't hurt, that he didn't play very much and that they might even play DeAndre Jordan ahead of him just based off of being a lob threat, pick and roll, dive player. That's not what Looney does. He's a DHO big. He's a guy who can play at the elbows. He can play in horn sets. He passes. He sets good screens for your shooters. These are the things that you want from him. And I actually thought New Orleans targeting him the way that they did last year to be their primary backup, that was a mistake for them. I think he fits better on this version of the Lakers and even last year's version of the Lakers. So I'm interested in his fit on the team and questioning whether or not he still has the legs and movement and be able to do it physically out on the court for a shift a half. And I guess we'll see. Especially if the Lakers don't make another big man signing.
Yeah, I think my expectation right now is that he's going to be the backup. And it's almost like they were like, okay, what big man is the opposite of Jackson Hayes? Like in strengths and weaknesses, how could we just do the total opposite? It gives the Lakers two of the strongest players at the five spot. This was something that in doing a little bit of digging a year or so ago about, you know, why doesn't Christian Koloko play more? That was one of the answers that I got back was he gets pushed around in the paint a decent amount. And that's something that Redick is really sensitive to. That's something he really wants is a five that can hold their ground. And between Looney and Kessler, you've got two great rebounders and two of the strongest guys in the league at that spot. But what you said about him not being a roll man, a dive man, we've got Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves on our team, and I think that this signals a certain stylistic shift that I want to get into a little bit later, but just from watching Looney the last couple of years, and he's a guy I've always really liked, right? He's a guy that is a winning player. He's sort of a offensive lineman version of a basketball player in that he doesn't need touches to have a good game. He will crash the boards like crazy, sets those great screens, like you said. Also very intelligent, understands the game really well, could pass the ball, and is more of that five-out flow offense type of player that I think indicates a bit of a, oh, we might go in a different direction offensively, at least in the minutes that he's in the game over the course of this season. But again, just evaluating these players on their own right now before the whole thing's put together, the last couple of years that I've watched him, including a couple of games last year, he only played 21, but he's just glacial out there in terms of how he moves. He's so slow at this point that that's part of the reason, like you said, it's a surprise that he's only 30 years old because he just moves so poorly. And, you know, I know he had some injury issues last year and they had some depth chart stuff. And like you said, it was kind of a wonky fit, but I don't know, man. On his own, I just have a hard time picturing him sort of keeping up with the rest of the team while also acknowledging that we've gone in a totally different direction with our fives in that both him and Kessler, he's more exaggerated in this respect, but both of them are low usage players. And we haven't had low usage fives. We had Anthony Davis at the five for several years, even when we had JaVale and Dwight to cover that spot for some of the minutes. Like AD was still the most minutes at the center spot. And so you have to go back quite a bit for the Lakers to have this type of center that is just a dirty work screen setter, rebounder, all of that. And I think that there's value in that, but it's remarkable to me, D, that we have gone in such the opposite direction of lob threat, of all of that. And Kessler's a good lob threat, don't get me wrong, but overall, that's just not the thing they prioritize at that position.
We had talked about the idea of the Lakers getting similar players who sort of do the same job as the guy behind them. Mm-hmm. And Looney, though he's not a lob threat, is very similar to Kessler. In rewatching some Kessler tape, I had spoken about him in a way before where I was like, oh, he's a big dude. He sets good screens. But the more I watch him, he slips out of screens more than I actually realized as I watched more film on him. He's actually not setting as good as screens as he could for as big a player as he is. And some of his effectiveness as a screener was actually more not out of ball screens, but out of DHO
away screens.
He didn't have to come up and set the actual ball screen. It's like playing through him with five out action and guys sort of zipping around him in ways. And this is exactly how Looney plays as well. So the idea of having DHO bigs who can play in the short role a little bit and finish around the basket when they get set up, but also be monster offensive rebounders and guys who hold their ground physically on both ends, both as like defensive players, but on offense, when they get in the dunker spot or they camp underneath the rim, they're very difficult to move and they are very quick to the ball in short area spaces. And Kessler does that more with his length and height and size, but Looney does it because he's a great phone booth player and he's strong and he knows all the tricks of the trade. I see him shove and throw little elbows and little things like that. And he caught AD a couple times in the games where AD got hit in the head and had to leave against the Warriors. A couple of those were Looney just clocked him a couple of times. So Looney around the basket, he's smaller and thinner, but in terms of what their skill sets and how they deploy their skill sets, he actually reminds me a little bit of Kessler in that, no, DHO, setting screens, helping to facilitate five-out offense as sort of a non-spacer, and then a guy that goes to the offensive glass. And there's real overlap in those aspects of their skill set. And so let's go to break here, and when we come back, I wanted to kick another idea to you about the Looney signing. So, Pete, this goes to the other thing that's sort of out there lurking as Lakers news, which is their pursuit of another forward. I actually think that the quote-unquote backup center for the Lakers isn't so clear-cut that they're going to always play like, here's Kessler as our starting center, and here's Kevon Looney or whoever else might be signed in front of him as the backup center. I actually think that the center position is going to be a three-headed monster of Kessler, a guy who does similar things to Kessler, and then Mamu as a 4-5. And I'm wondering if they signed a player like Looney as a, like, you are part of a group of bigs where you may not play every mm-hmm. game, and there may be matchups for you where you are more important, but in other games, they may just play pure five-out offensive, spread the floor, nowhere to hide offense. That means playing Mamu there and potentially having another big forward who can play next to him. What do you think of that idea as well?
I think that's accurate. It just makes me extremely uncomfortable. Like, one of the things that coaching really taught me is just because it's not my idea doesn't mean it's wrong. However, this is so far away from my proclivities in terms of what I think wins at the NBA level, in that Mamu's not a good defensive player. It's my biggest concern about him going forward in terms of the playoffs. Like, I think he's a peanut butter and jelly fit on the offensive end, and he's going to become a fan favorite because he can shoot, pass, dribble, and he's just very saucy player, like fun to watch, and should fit in this type of style that we're talking about of like the big men rather than being pick and roll threats to the same degree, although Kessler can do both. The screen away DHO type of style that I think Mamu's just going to be great in, that whether he's at the five or the fourth spot. But defensively, when you combine that with our guards on the perimeter, like Grimes is our best defender on the perimeter. And judging by the press release yesterday, sounded more and more like Jaden Hardy's going to stay. We will see if he's traded, but they usually don't release those for guys that they're going to move in 3 days in an expanded Kessler trade or something like that, right? And Hardy's a bad defender too. So we've just got a really poor perimeter defense. And then we're talking about putting Mamu at the five in a decent number of lineups on some nights where Kevon Looney can't play. And that, I don't know, man. I think that's a recipe for, I know they're going for a certain nowhere to hide type of thing, but I'm very uncomfortable about that, D, is that you got to have a certain amount of defense on the floor to be able to really compete at the highest levels. And they're just, I was super curious to what direction they would go in when given all of the space to build your own new team. Like, this is a total revamp of the roster. And the fact that there's just so little defense on it, man, I know there's a couple moves to still be made, but it's very concerning if you're talking about Mamu combined with the guards. He was surrounded by Scotty Barnes and some decent perimeter defenders in Toronto that I just think it's a recipe for, I don't want to say disaster. I don't think it's going to be disaster. And I think they're going to be a really good regular season team, even based on who they are now. But that's just not enough defense by my estimation.
They need two more players who can hold their own on that side of the floor, if not be like turn up guys who are just like, no. When a possession comes down to getting a stop, I can lock in and be a really good defensive player. And even a player like Kuminga, a very hot name right now in terms of the Lakers' pursuit of him and their reported pursuit of him, I think that he can fit that mold, but he's not a guy where you're just like, Kuminga, he's going to be our perimeter stopper. I was watching some tape on Grimes that you sent me, actually, which is a couple of years old at this point. But I can understand why the Lakers are just like, I see something in him as a defensive player. But one of the things that that tape revealed was his deployment on players ranging from prime Damian Lillard all the way up to having to defend really good Kawhi Leonard and Jason Tatum. There was a bit of a Goldilocks idea to Quentin Grimes as well, where it's just like, guys like Kawhi and Tatum were just too big and strong for him. And then I see tape of him guarding Dame and Ja Morant, and I'm just like, he's got size that could bother these guys, but they're too quick for him, right? But then I'm watching tape of him against Devin Booker.
Yes.
And I'm just like, against guys like this, you got it. Against guys like this, you're fundamental, you contest high, you play with high hands, your arms are out, contesting passing lanes, you're strong enough where even when they bump you off and they're like-sized players, you can stand in there and absorb a hit and still contest with your arms up. I see it with guys like this, but the whole go run the gamut of all of these types of dudes,
no,
that's not it for him either.
It's interesting because we didn't talk about our observations from watching the same tape, but that was one of the things I noticed is that Trae Young, Donovan Mitchell, guys like that, when they have a level of quickness and ball handling to them, that they were too quick for Grimes. But yep. guys like Devin Booker and Jaylen Brown, he did a better job against because they don't have the same level of ball handling that those guys do. I did think that he did a decent job of guarding up, but the defense feels a little incoherent to me, especially if Grimes is that main on-ball guy. And the reason is both Kessler and Looney are drop coverage fives. Looney pretty much exclusively. Kessler can do a little bit more, but that's what he's best at. That's why you get a guy like Kessler, is to really be able to lock in that coverage. But that coverage has two main parts to it. It's that big guy lurking in the paint, but it's also the back pressure. And Grimes just isn't that big. It's a physical tools thing. He plays hard. You're not going to watch him on defense and be like, ah, oh, this guy's dogging it. Like, no, he plays hard. He is quick. He has good fundamentals, really good at contesting shots. He's always going to get his hand up and really try to bother the shot. But if you're asking him to provide back pressure, he's neither got the length nor the strength. And those are the two ways that you can really provide that, is that if you're strong, like say a guy like Marcus, who's not that tall and doesn't provide that length, but he's strong, where if he's leaning on you on your back or on your hip, you're going to feel that. And it's not going to be a comfortable raise up into the jumper. Or you've got that length, where there's that old Danny Green clip where he's funneling Goran Dragic to AD in the finals. And Danny's right behind him, got his arms up, and Dragic has to jump and lean forward to get the shot up, leading him right into the shot-blocking arms of Anthony Davis, who swapped that away. And so there's an incoherence to that, where it's, we're not going to get the best out of Kessler or the drop coverages if that's what we have on the perimeter.
This is one of the reasons why, the more I look at the roster, the bigger need is that rangy defensive forward who's an athlete. And it's one of the reasons why I think that they're chasing Kuminga so hard. It's not necessarily because he's the best version of that archetype, but he's the best that's available to them right now. And he can really fill a hole. And one of the things I thought watching the Grimes tape, as he was having to defend Jason Tatum and Kawhi Leonard and all of these bigger forwards, was just, he's fighting against these guys and he's doing all of the same stuff he was doing against Devin Booker. It's just less effective against Kawhi Leonard and Jason Tatum than it is against Devin Booker. And that makes sense. Kawhi's freaking one of the strongest perimeter players in the entire league. And Jason Tatum, 6'10". He can just shoot over the top or go into the post and score. I was just looking at this Grimes tape, and you know what he needs here is, he needs a dude who's bigger and stronger than him to take these matchups so that he could guard the next dude down. And Luka, one of the things that's been killing me about all of these Lakers depth chart tweets that I've been seeing out there is how often they're listing Austin Reeves at small forward, because they're listing Luka at point guard. And defensively, that's just not what it is. Luka's a forward defensively. And the way that you protect Austin defensively and Luka defensively is to slot two defensive wing sorts of players. And what you need is a 3-4 that can guard the guy that Luka doesn't guard. And then you get a shooting guard size guy that can guard some point guards or can guard some shooting guards based off of whatever we think is the best matchup for Austin. And Austin's also going to compete defensively in a way where I feel comfortable with him guarding either of those positions based off of matchups or whatever. And if both the shooting guard and the point guard are good, I don't need to feel like I have to hide Austin on the small forward in this case. No, let him go guard one of these good guys. I expect him to compete. And is he going to give up baskets? Sure, but he's also going to get some baskets of his own, and it's going to be a fight. But in getting back to this larger discussion of Looney and Mamu and the centers, is that it's the whole idea of slotting, Pete, that we've been talking about for, what, a decade now? It's not just offensive slotting, it's defensive slotting. And the way that you help a player like Looney be viable defensively is to give him guards who could chase over the top, who could provide some back pressure, and not only back pressure, but can recover to get back in front, so that then Looney can go back to shoving the big man out of the way and getting on the defensive glass. It's all a dance, and it's all this coordinated choreography between two-player actions and three-player actions and five guys on a string, and that's what makes effective defense. And the Lakers are going to need as much of that as they can get, because individually, they don't have the DPOY guy besides maybe their starting center, who they hope is going to be that level of defensive anchor. But you can't just have one guy, because Kessler can't guard everyone. That's not his job either.
Let's go to break here. Come back. Keep going. So, yeah, you certainly can't ask Walker Kessler to do everything. And I was talking about Grimes and sort of the lack of back pressure that he can provide with his length or strength. But the reason I focus on him is he's the only guy that we got. He's like the best guy that we've got on the perimeter currently at that, where Looney's going to be playing in bench lineups with Colin Sexton at the one, who he's got that speed and quickness, but talk about a guy that you're not going to feel in terms of back pressure, same type of thing. And if Jaden Hardy is, whether it's Hardy or Carr in that backup two type of spot, that they're bad at this too. This is not what they do. And so I'm really worried about the lack of perimeter defensive talent between the Looney signing and that he's going to need sort of defenders around him. And then just overall on the bench, like Looney's going to be playing with those bench groups a decent amount that I just see problems on both ends of that.
And this is why in the big picture, Pete, the Lakers roster as constructed right now to me is they are three players short to me, or two and a half. They need a starting forward, and I think they need a backup or a wing that can push Grimes to the bench. And then that half a player is another sort of competition dude. Now, maybe that player is already on the roster, and that's Jake. It's the sort of competition wing that is just like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to compete. Some of what you're describing right now as who's going to go out there and play defense on wing-sized players on bench groups, right now that's Jake LaRavia. He's still on the team. Now, he can't guard point guards, but he can guard shooting guards and small forwards. Is he going to do better on small forwards and power forwards? Yes. I think shooting guards a bit of a stretch for him, but this is why I want one more guy who can compete for minutes at this job.
Well, that's why I think he would be, if we were to get Kuminga, he would be his backup. But for me, when I talk about this topic, this is who can play in the playoffs. And Jake is currently on the outside looking in of that. I agree he's going to fill that spot. And he did a good job of that. Like him and Marcus's minutes together were really good. And also on the Grimes point, whether it's pushes Grimes to the bench would be ideal. But even if it's just a different guard that can do that and that guy's coming off the bench instead, just having that tool in the toolbox, like neither Sexton nor Hardy do that.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't want Hardy to play.
He should be moved. If they keep that on $6 million, I don't know, maybe Luka vouched for him or something like that because they played together. But even if he did, Luka's not the GM of the team. This is one thing that drives me crazy with the Lakers is just because your star player likes a guy or wants a guy, there has to be a higher level of, well, we're going to factor that in, but this is my job. This is my expertise. And your expertise is to be Luka freaking Doncic. And it's unfair to ask our stars to be like, oh, you got to be one of the better GMs in the league too. And we're just going to get the guy that you want. So anyhow, I have no idea if Luka had any input at all on that. But if we keep Hardy at $6 million after getting Sexton, there's just a redundancy there and just a gaping hole in terms of perimeter defense.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm a little irritated this morning. It's actually more about the Hardy press release and being like, oh shit, are they going to keep him? And are we going to have Sexton and Hardy as our back? And he can score. He's a talented guy. He's athletic, right? I don't want to act like he brings nothing to the table, but it's just redundancy, man, that I don't know.
The thing I'm looking for is a fourth guard, and that shouldn't be Jaden Hardy. Full stop. The offseason is not over. I expect the Lakers to make at least one more real signing. They're obviously chasing a starting level forward. Just the idea that Kuminga is in the news this much tells me that the Lakers understand from a roster construction standpoint, they need a starting level forward. It doesn't even have to be Kuminga who ends up being the answer there. I think he's the hottest name out there because he's a free agent. And technically, all they have to do is create salary cap space in order to try to sign him outright. Mm-hmm. Now, that hasn't been working to this point. But in theory, I think that's why they're chasing him. It doesn't require trading anything yet. Mm-hmm. But they need a fourth guard as well. Because if you just look at the depth chart, your fourth guard can't be Jaden Hardy. That's not good enough for your team. And from a redundancy standpoint, you already said it. Your four guards can't be Austin Reeves, Quentin Grimes, Colin Sexton, and Jaden Hardy. What you need in that spot is a guy who is maybe even the inverse of Grimes. As good as Grimes can be on offense, you need a guy who can approach that defensively. Mm-hmm. And as good as Grimes is on defense, you need a guy who can approach that offensively. And that makes him Grimes' backup.
Right.
Right. As you said. And then that's your fourth guard. And then you go to business with that. And Hardy is your break in case of emergency guard. He is your Nick Smith guard. He's the guy that plays when one of the other ball handlers is hurt or potentially you need a spark or something else.
$6 million to that player is a misallocation of resources.
Yes.
That should be a bet minimum player.
I agree, 1,000%. And it's one of the reasons why my expectation would be that Hardy gets moved. And I get it, press release and everything else. But honestly, in terms of an order of operations deal, we know from all the offseason talks that we've been having that the Ayton trade was going to happen first.
That's true. And you can't just be like, oh, we acquired this guy.
We traded DeAndre Ayton. And
who'd you get back? We traded DeAndre Ayton.
That's not the whole press release.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
I guess the whole like, oh, so, he's going to wear number 7. It was more like the details of the press. Again, this might be just reading too much into it. Let's hope.
I think that that's fair, but this is also where we are as Lakers fans at this part of the offseason. And I think we're clamoring for the team that is going to be there, and it's not quite there yet. And so we can only go off of what we see. And intrinsically, our brain knows that there's more to be done. We know that they know there's more to be done because the reporting's out there that they're still trying to do stuff. Also, the fact that the Kessler trade hasn't happened.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think that it's clear that one or both of the teams, the Lakers and the Jazz, are trying to do more within the context of this specific trade. This is the biggest offseason move either of them are going to do. It involves the most money, right? And I think both of them are like, can we expand this? And can we make it a bigger deal to accomplish more of our offseason goals in one fell swoop? And honestly, if the Lakers could clear money in this trade more and create more salary cap space in order to sign Jonathan Kuminga outright, they've been having conversations with him and his representation. I'm sure they have a sense of what the number would be for them to just sign him outright. And if they can try to make that happen in a single deal to create salary cap space, I would imagine that's what they're trying to do. The Jazz can take back, because of base year compensation rules and all kinds of stuff that I don't even want to dive into right now with Walker Kessler, signed and traded as a restricted free agent. But long story short, Utah can take back up to half of the salary the Lakers are going to pay him. They could absorb that much salary within the trade.
So it couldn't
right?
be like
and have
a
it still be legal.
So it couldn't be like a Kessler makes $30 million and Utah gets $30 million. It's Kessler makes 30 and they get back 15.
That's right. Or they can send out more players in that, right? And they can be like, okay, well, where's the dead weight on our books? And can we trade something out and add to that number? Or can we get back a $17 million player or a $15 million player? You and I were talking about this offline the other day, but the Jazz's salary structure is Lauri Markkanen, 40-something million. Jaren Jackson Jr., 40-something million. The next highest paid player is Derek Peterson, who's a rookie.
Crazy.
Who's making $13 million this upcoming season. And a lot of the lower salary players on their roster are guys that the Jazz like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if they're like, what we actually want is to sign a middle-class level player. We want a $20 million player because we think that's going to help us. We're better than we thought this year. Who are we going to trade? Oh, well, yeah, you know who I want? I want Ace Bailey. He makes $8 million and we need to cobble together the salary. It's just like, no, that's not what we want.
No.
We actually don't want to do that. And so I think they want a capable player who could maybe play in their rotation, but is also salary ballast in case they need salary ballast for whatever reason. Because you don't want to go digging into having Isaiah Collier be a throw-in or Sensabaugh being a throw-in. That's not what they want. So they should be finding something else. And it's one of the reasons why I think that that deal hasn't happened yet, because both teams are probably out there like, how can we make this more beneficial to us if this is going to be the main thing we do this offseason? Where's your head at around it?
Yeah, it's all of that with also the caveat that they could do all of that exploration and be like, nothing really that we like that we would want to do. And then they just
culminate the deal as is. But I do think that it speaks to a degree of, it's helpful to keep this open because you can rope in other stuff that once that's finalized becomes a lot harder to make. Now, the Sexton deal, that is somewhat contingent, I think, on Kessler being. Would the Sexton deal happen last? Because that was the other one that they haven't announced yet while announcing Mamu and Grimes. What's the deal there in terms of the order of things?
Yeah. Sexton is signing with the room exception. I'm pretty sure it will not happen until after they use their salary cap space, which is Kessler sliding into a bunch of their salary cap space. Mm. And in fact, if the Lakers were to create more salary cap space, I would expect them, whatever they do with that extra cap space that they acquired, for them to use that first before the Sexton signing becomes official as well. And I would expect the order of operations to be exactly that, that the last two moves to be Sexton and then Austin.
Oh, makes sense. Makes sense. All right. We'll wrap up here. If nothing Lakers drops, we will do that trip around the NBA. You brought up Darren Peterson. He was awesome in Utah Summer League. We got the Vegas Summer League coming up. Public service announcement. You got Friday and Saturday games for the Lakers. That's when they play this weekend. So stay tuned for that. We'll be back tomorrow with another pod. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score. Two, score. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.